All righty. So we'll go ahead and start our meeting. If I can ask the clerk to take the roll call.
Excuse me. Trustee Johnson. Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
Trustee Bochner.
Here.
Trustee Gillis. Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
President Adusi.
I am here. Okay. If you can all stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. And again, welcome to our Village Board meeting. It's October 14th. So no citizens comments. Okay, very good. Okay, so we have no citizens comments. We'll go ahead and do the elected official comments and announcements. And maybe Erica, if you don't mind starting with you.
Yeah.
Katie, a little break.
Like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. Not too many comments tonight. I've been asked to speak by Equality Illinois tomorrow on being in public office and being LGBTQ plus. So looking very much forward to that. And then I did just want to mention something that I saw in the news a couple of days ago. And just in remembrance of a UW student from River Forest who was killed in 1985, that person was charged recently. And so just wanted to acknowledge that, remember that.
Yeah, I can. Gene, their system. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay, Rez.
Okay. Just good evening, everyone, and happy Columbus and Indigenous Days for everyone celebrating. And then just one thing, I think Halloween is coming around the corner before our next board meeting. So I wish all families and children have a great time, but to be safe. And the times for Halloween is from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. So, have a good time. All right. That's all.
Thanks, Russ. John?
Nothing to add. Thanks.
Good evening. Having just stepped off a plane, I'm not prepared to add anything tonight.
Okay. No worries.
Just a couple things. In case you haven't noticed and you haven't driven through River Forest Town Center, we have two new tenants over there. Kava, which is a Mediterranean restaurant. And the J. Crew outlet have both opened up. So congratulations to them and, shop River Forest.
Yeah, great. And add to that, Hub Kitchen on North Avenue. Have their business license. Okay, I just have a few things. I was invited and attended along with my colleagues from Oak Park, Elmwood Park, and Forest Park. A breakfast meeting with the Oak Park Area Association Realtors. And it was just a presentation that each of us gave on the state of our village and the prospects of economic development and what's new and exciting. So many of these things that Bob, you just mentioned, we kind of talked about some new businesses that are coming. There's a lot of excitement in our regional area, actually. So that's the good news. I also was invited by Ms. McCole, who is a third grade teacher at Lincoln, to present a local government session of her curriculum, I guess. And so it's always fun to talk to third graders. I mean, believe it or not, they have a lot of intelligent questions. So it was kind of fun. That's all I have. So we'll go ahead and go to the consent agenda. So if I can get a trustee to move A through, what do we got here? Okay.
Motion to approve consent agenda items A through I.
Second.
Okay. Any questions or comments on those? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read out loud each item and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, September 23rd, 2024. B, monthly department reports. C, accounts payable, September 2024, $2,011,049.10. D, September financial report. E, administration department report. F, authorization to donate surplus property, computers, ordnance. G, adoption of the Cook County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan Resolution. H, award of contract 2024 Public Works Garage Interior Remodel, Futurity 19 Incorporated, $112,600. I, purchase of a Ford F-550 pickup truck and plow equipment, Sutton Ford of Madison, regional truck equipment, $75,910. Trustee Bochner?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yeah.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Okay, great. So our next item is item nine, which is new business. And we have an introduction of a presentation tonight by the folks from the tennis club. Hi, guys, and welcome. So this is your kind of part in our agenda for you to come up and tell us about what the tennis club wants to do. Just for everybody's edification, this is just a discussion and a conversation. It's no action on our part. Just hearing out what you want to do and see for the tennis club. So welcome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. My name is Lai Sinaki. I'm with two presidents here, Sandy Graves and our next president, Dan Baker, representing River Forest Tennis Club. We really appreciate all of your time and thank you for listening to our proposal here. Our idea here is pretty simple. We've got a pretty comprehensive deck today. I'll just go through as many slides as you all would like. I'll probably go through the first about five or six slides, and then we can go more or less however you guys would like. Let you kind of lead the way. Our goal is simple. We just want to really fiscally and responsibly and collaboratively add lights to our courts, right? Fiscally responsible and collaborative with our neighbors, with our village, and with our members. Okay. And the reasoning is really simple. We're just trying to get more time with our kids. We're, you know, after school. Between after school and sunset, not too many hours, and everyone's using the courts, which is wonderful. We have a wonderful club. So we're just trying to expand that a little bit. Hopefully the adults can play later and the kids and the adults can play right before bedtime. So simple idea. Our considerations, right? We want to maintain, we feel that we have a very positive impact on the community. We want to keep that positive impact. Our community is not only River Forest, but our surrounding towns too. We come up with 400 different families across many, many towns, not just River Forest. Next piece is we want to minimize, if not eliminate, any light spillage outside of the tennis courts. Okay, we want to make sure the lights, moreover, are just used on an individual court. If you use that court, that's where the lights are placed. If not, you turn them on and off. When you're off, when you're done with the court, you turn them off. Visuals, aesthetics, very, very big in this town. We appreciate that and we love that. We don't want 50 or 70 foot poles. We want huge poles. We want nice, pretty, small, short poles. That's what we're trying to do to keep that in line with our community. No changes to levels of traffic and noise. We want to keep it as is. And we're not wanting to extend the time of our club 6 months right now, April to September. We want to keep that. Just hopefully extend it number of hours in the day, not months in the year. Questions there? Good.
Okay. I have a question. Please. When you say extending that number of hours in the day between April and September, what are you talking about?
So just daytime hours, so, you know, time that we can use the club. Right?
Yes. So what would be the last time that the lights would go off at night?
We're proposing 6 a.m. to 10 p.m.
And then you'd turn them on based on when you need them.
Exactly right. So there'll be a master schedule. They could never turn on outside of those hours. And then they'll never turn on unless someone's on the court in that specific court.
right? So if I'm on one court, that's the only court that's lit. We're not going to open all 10, you know, and we're asking for 10 courts to be lit as well.
Is that like April 1st to September 30th, or how does that?
We're open really yeah. until the first snowfall hit.
You need to go to the, because if someone's listening on audio, they can't hear you. It's really frustrating.
No, no. So sorry. So, sorry, loud voice. We're open till the first snowfall. The goal is to have the lights, especially in the early season, you know, before daylight saving times and a little bit after. So the bulk of the summer hours, it's pretty good, but it's the beginning and the ending of the season. Our season is incredibly small. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Andy.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess there's no set date.
No. Well, it depends on the weather, really.
It is weather related.
Yeah, but it gets cold, you. As you know.
So. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I have another question. Is it please. Just tennis or is it also your pickle courts?
No, tennis only.
Tennis only. Thank you.
Good questions.
Yeah.
Again, we believe we add value to the neighbors. We represent 400 families, River Forest and outside of River Forest. We do tennis lessons outside of River Forest, non-members. We do swim lessons as well for non-members as well. So we're completely community outside, in and outside of River Forest. Second big piece is that we all go play at Keystone because that's the only lit court in town, right, at night. So I'm hoping that if we're able to get this approved, we can stay at RFTC and then everyone else, pickleball and tennis, can use Keystone. So the idea is also to decompress and give other people the opportunity to play at Keystone. Family club, we're very stressed the importance of giving back. We volunteer our time. No one gets paid. We're all here out of the goodness of our heart. We're a working club. Yeah, exactly. You guys know, right? We have tons of committees and everybody needs to, every member has to be on multiple committees. So you guys all know how it is. We have minimal staff. Our staff at RFTC is really only maintenance and groundskeeping. And again, we contribute to the community over the course of the last ever, and we hope to continue for forever while we're here. Really important about the light spillage, the technology now versus the past is vastly different. It's vastly superior lighting technology right now, and we have many, many slides just on this point, but they're anti-glare, direct light right onto the court, and indirect light when you're a player, when you're looking at it, which means that you have fewer poles, less height poles, less light needed to light the courts, and very little, if not zero, light spillage outside of the courts. Okay, as you can see on Lathrop, there's zero light spillage. The only spillage on Lathrop would be in our parking lot, which is great. In the 0.38 light spillage, it's foot candles, and I've got a slide explaining that. I didn't know what in the world foot candles were, but now I know through this, right? So 0.38 is really, 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 really tiny. I've got some kind of explanations on what that really means. Aside from that, we installed windscreens, which stops both the light and the noise a little bit. And we also have a ton of trees and a ton of bushes all around the property. These metrics do not take into account any of that, the windscreen or the trees or the bushes as well. So it's even less in reality. Again, courts in use, you're only lit individual basis and only when you're on the court. And then we're going to ask people to start with the middle of the property court and then work their way out to the residential side. So if there's only two courts being used, they're absolutely in the middle of the property with the church and the school and no actual homes on either side. Questions, Sarah?
I have a question.
Yes.
I wasn't on the board when this happened, but I think this has come before the board before.
Yes.
Can you explain, is this the same proposal or is it different in any way? And what would
So I wasn't part of the club back in 2012, I believe it was. But I digitized every neighbor meeting, every comment, and we addressed every single one in this. A lot of questions that they had were addressed by the windscreen or by they had questions on the maintenance in the wintertime, things like that. So we were able to address that. Their biggest was light spillage, and the technology is completely different, 2012 versus 2024. And they're all LEDs. It's really neat. I didn't realize it until I started looking into this. It's actually really interesting on the concept. Pole height, we had multiple options and I explained the different pole height from really, really short to really, really tall, like a Keystone, the 50 foot. We're suggesting 30 feet, which is very short. And we would go stay on the perimeter of the court And that will allow us to have very, very few poles and few light spillage. No change to noise or traffic. Again, 6 months out of the year, we're there. We're anticipating to stay 6 months out of the year. Mother Nature kind of handles the other couple months out of the year for us, so we can't do anything about that. Our pool is already open till 9 p.m. every night. Kids have a blast. We're there all the time, but the kids are having a wonderful time there until 9 p.m. And most of us walk or bike to school, to the club anyway. Because you guys were so kind enough to allow us to do some renovations 2 years ago, we expanded our whole walkway, our whole bikes rack and everything. So it's even better now to get there than it was in the past. And again, the idea is just to let the adults play later in the night so the kids and the parents can play right before sunset. Some of the things that were addressed last time, ma'am, was that the leaf cleanup, the snow shoveling, the clay runoff were three items that were addressed asked last time in 2012, and all three were taken care of since. We believe there's no impact to any of the neighbors' property value. And then we've also added safety and security items as well, since we'll be there later. If this proposal gets approved, right, we're going to have extended hours for the staff. We'll have security cameras installed on the property. There already are, but we'll have it on the tennis courts as well as just more in general. We're going to make sure that the only members are allowed to know the code for the lights, so that way we don't have people that we don't know playing on the courts at night when no one is there or very few people are there, right? Security cameras will also help with that. And we already have, regarding existing policies during the day, what you can and can't do on and off the field, on the courts regarding liquor, and that will not change. You're never allowed to drink on the courts, and you're only allowed to have alcohol for events like Saturday night events, or we have things like that. That's the only time we can have alcohol on the premises, but never on the courts. That's not going to change. Any questions on security? Okay. And then from here on, it's kind of just explains all the due diligence, all the vendors we talked to, and I'm happy to go through the whole thing, but I just wanted to pause for a second. That was kind of the summary part of the presentation.
Yeah, and Liz, I will just add that I think back in 2012, and I think you're right, you addressed many of the issues that I think the surrounding neighbors had. However, they also talked, and I think you guys have done a great job in this as well, and just like the overspill of garbage that comes, you know, like people just drop a can or, you know, I don't know if they mean to do that or they just, you know, whatever. I think you've done a really good job of keeping the area clean, and especially what you just did with the tennis club recently with all the remodeling, I think helped just the look and feel of it. So I know that was one of the issues I think you also addressed, just the making sure the maintenance and the garbage and the things and the noise, yes. You know, people coming out talking loud, yes. Has always been a concern, but I think you've been very good neighbors. At least that's what I'm hearing around it.
I have a question for Matt. So in the plan development process, there appears to be about 16 or 18 steps. Which ones? This is, I assume, like the village board introduction. So of these 16 steps, what's kind of the path?
Sure. So this is really like the second step. The first is really just a conversation with the applicant and kind of review of the preliminary documents. From here, there's no action required from the village board. The next step is a similar introduction to the development review board, where the applicant can request waivers to the 20 or so requirements for submission. And then once those are either granted or denied, we will proceed to neighborhood meetings where there's notices sent out to the community, a more in-depth look at the application documents. A technical review committee is what we call it, when the applicant will meet with village staff to discuss. That includes police, fire, public works, and administration, just to think about any other concerns that can come up and try and tailor or improve the submission to make sure it minimizes any adverse impact on the community. There's three steps in the process that require neighborhood notice through mailings, in addition to signage and in the newspaper as well. That's all required in our plan development process. So there's a public hearing with the development review board. They will make a recommendation, then that will come back to the village board ultimately to grant amendment to the plan development.
So given kind of where this sits in the village, and I understand it's by statute that we have to notify people within 500 feet of the property, I think given where it is, I think the signage for this development is going to be, the notice of public hearing will be much, what needs to be really
greater,
you know,
right.
greater than in a normal case on a commercial, right. And, on a commercial street yeah. or whatever, because it does affect people more than 500 feet away. So.
Right. So yeah, yes, the village code mandates that the notices are sent to 500 to property owners within 500 feet of the edge of the property line. That's the bare minimum. So there certainly can be a discussion about.
Well, and then that's why I think what Bob is saying, yeah. at what point in time, we don't want to say, oh, we thought about this and then we didn't do it. So at what point in time does that happen and can the board weigh in on that? Of course they can.
Well, of course, right. This would be, I guess, a time to have that. And then staff would speak with the applicant to pull the address list. The village is responsible for providing that address list and the envelopes required. And then the applicant ultimately is responsible for mailing those out.
I think with the Northeast Corridor, one of the things that we talked about was
yep.
going right. at least one or two blocks out. Yep. And we may just, and sure. that just sort of being our normal
yep.
operations going yep. forward. It may just be good to look at this and see, does it need to go out more than that or not, to Bob's point. I'm also curious in the process that you were talking about, and you mentioned, you know, request for waivers in your letter. You say that you would like to request waivers. Do you know what those would be?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
Yes, absolutely. So we've got them right here. It's minimal. Sorry, it's minimal, but I'll read them. Is it okay if I just
yeah,
read them off?
Please.
That's okay? Okay. Yeah. And again, this is just our ask, so it's, of course, up to you all to tell us if that's okay or not. The first seven, and can I just say, first seven, we're 100% okay with. There's a landscaping plan request. We're asking if we can have a waiver on that, because this project doesn't have anything to do with composition or the vegetation. The number nine is a substance of covenants, easements, other restrictions existing and any to be imposed on the use of land, including common open space and building structures. We don't have anything to do with the building structure, so we're asking for that one, please, to be waived. Number 10, 11, no issues. Number 12, the professional traffic study. I'd like to request a waiver there. Again, no, we don't expect any traffic or noise to be changed. So we're asking for that one. That's number 12. Number 13, the financial capability, the 13A, we're good. 13B and C, B is the evidence of the project's economic viability, and C is the analysis summarizing the economic impact. Both were asking to be waived. I get happy to provide. I just don't think this has an issue with those two, or an effect, excuse me, on those two. Number 14, copies of all environmental impact studies as required by law. Again, I don't think this will impact environment. Analysis reporting the anticipated demand on village services. I don't think we're going to affect village services, so we're asking for that one to be waived, please. 16, a plan showing offsite utility improvements required to service the planned development. We're not needing any offsite utility improvements, so we're asking for that one, please. 17, the site drainage plan. We're asking for that one to be waived. I don't think it has anything to do with the drainage. And again, please tell me if I'm incorrect, but those are our asks. And finally, number 18, the list of the site development allowances. And we're not asking for any site development allowances. And 19, we're good. Does that answer your question?
Yes, that does. And then you mentioned that the lights would be on from 6, 8, or I can't remember.
Available to be
available
on 6 to 10.
6 a.m. to 10 yeah. p.m. or whatever. If somebody forgets to turn off the lights,
yep.
do the lights go off
yeah,
on Mac?
Absolutely. That's a great question. Even though we say 6 to 10, it's really 3 hours, really 6 to 7, and then probably like 8 to 10. So the very beginning, obviously the rest of the time we won't need it. We'll have a master schedule, can't turn on before 6, can't turn on after 10 p.m., and then an individual court schedule too. So, and again, we'll have staff there at night. So if they see someone booked the court but it's not there or left early, they can turn it off as well. It's remote. It's really neat. There's an app. You can turn it off physically or while they're sitting in the office.
Oh, okay. So they don't automatically turn off at 10 a.m.
At 10 p.m. Absolutely. Sorry. Yes, there's a master schedule. They turn off 100% at 10 p.m.
Okay.
But if someone is there at 8 p.m. and they see the staff, no one's playing, we're going to turn that light off, right? Okay. Or someone leaves early, they play for half an hour, they leave early, staff can turn that off.
Okay.
But great. Absolutely 10 p.m. Thank you.
Can I? Yes, one more. Who actually makes the decision on the waiver request? Is that the village staff?
The development review board. The
development review board. Okay.
Makes the ultimate decision. It's common for them to ask for, you know, staff opinion on those requirements. But
okay, so you all have input. Okay. And then I do agree with the communication. And maybe you can put it on the village, and you probably were already thinking about that village newsletter, et cetera, so that everybody hears it. And I know there are going to be some people, it's going to be a surprise, but still, let's get it out.
I agree with you, Rez. I think communication will do whatever, all the normal things that we do all the time. But I think the one thing that will probably have to change, and probably permanently, frankly, is right now what we're talking about is when we have any type of development, we have a statute that we send out a notice to the within 500 feet of where the planned development will be to let the neighbors know or the businesses, whatever is near that, to that this is happening and that, you know, we welcome all opinions and communication. What we've seen at the board over time is that, you know, people want to know more, and 500 feet is just not nearly enough. So we've been talking about making it larger to 1,000 feet around the planned development. And that's probably what will happen here.
Yeah.
It's not a very costly thing. I mean, the applicant in your case will probably have to pick up the cost of that mailer, but it's very cheap, you know, and the benefit of having more people know about it is better than not. So that's what we're talking about here. So as far as the waivers, the only thing I ask, maybe you might want to think about, and I hear why you're saying traffic is not an issue, and I tend to agree, but I also will say that there will probably be residents and community members that will say, but there will be more because you'll have more time on the courts. If we have any type of, you know, that we can look at is kind of the paddle courts and the pickle courts over at Keystone. I mean, there are activity that happens at night, and it just happens because people want to play. And so you might want to consider that just as so that it doesn't come back and say, yeah, but you should have looked at the traffic.
It's a fantastic point. I don't know if it's now, if I can just a little bit, and then I'm happy to do anything. I think the total, in my opinion, I think total traffic is not going to increase, again, mostly because we walk and bike, most of us. Right now, there's a ton of traffic right between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m., which is we're right by Roosevelt. So right when all the kids and my kids are going out of school, right? It's great to push that traffic away from 3 to 6 when everyone is coming out, right? They're all biking. You've got 1,000 kids. It's a wonderful circus watching that come in and out. It's great. But I want that traffic to go down, right? So, but again, it's going to be, I think total traffic is not going to change. And especially since we bike and walk, I don't think it's going to increase, but it's a great point. So I'm happy to adjust.
Just think about it. Cause you know, maybe it's just the traffic changes.
Yeah.
Maybe not increase, but you need point. To, you might want to just provide that because it will probably change, you know, maybe not increase.
Happy.
That would be my only thought, as other waivers seem normal.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else have any comments for?
Hello.
Well, hi, sir, team. Okay. Well, great.
My son was there at Lincoln. He loved it. He was in third grade.
Great. Oh, good. Well, they're tough. They're tough. You know, they got tough questions.
From his mother, not from me. Yeah. Thank you.
Smart cookies. All right. So then, great. Thank you so much. I think so. We're going to, you know, move it on to the next phase for you with that input. All right. Super. Thank you. All right. So up next is our review and acceptance of our annual comprehensive financial report. So if I can get a motion in a second, and then we can let Rosie tell us all about our comprehensive plan.
Right. Move to accept the village's annual comprehensive financial report for the fiscal year ending on April 30th, or ended actually, April 30th, 2024.
Okay. Thanks. Welcome.
Good evening, everyone. You do have hard copies in front of you in case you want to look through it, but you know what? Save it. I think you should save it for when you're really, you want something riveting to read.
Yeah,
No, there are a few very important information in here.
I like this.
I am going to briefly discuss some of the financial highlights that are included in my memo also that was provided in the packet. And afterwards, Martha Trotter from Sickage will go over the annual comprehensive financial report. So feel free anytime to jump in if you have any questions for me or for Martha as we go on. I know there's a lot of information. You also have a couple other documents that are provided just to the Board of Trustees and the President for and management for internal purposes. So you can read those also. On my memo, the first page of my memo is a summary of the general fund revenues. And overall actual revenues exceeded budgeted revenues by $1,075,958. Or 5.63%. Some of the reasons why that is first of all, property tax revenues were higher than budgeted due to the timing of property tax receipts. Property tax revenues include the second installment of the 22 tax levy and the first installment of the 2023 levy, which is also an estimate based on 2022 taxes. State income tax revenues, again, receipts were $97,422 above the budgeted amount. This revenue source continues to exceed projections, no matter how much we keep increasing. Sales tax and non-home rural sales tax revenues also saw increases this fiscal year. And obviously, that's due to inflation and the consumer price index. These revenues are based on consumer spending and the cost of goods and services. Also, there is in grants, you'll see that grants are above what was budgeted, and that's really based on the recognition of our ARFA funds that we received. In total, it was like $1.4 million, but we have to recognize it over 3 years based on accounting rules. So that's why it's actually above what we budgeted. The expenditures by department are on page 2 of my memo. And general fund expenditures in total were slightly below the budgeted amount for the year. Administration expenses are above the budget due partly to the increase in personnel services due to filling vacancies. Building department expenditures are slightly above due to the increase in contractual services, which includes inspections, plan reviews, and we've gotten a lot. We've seen a heavier load of those this fiscal year. E911 expenditures are based on the West Suburban Consolidated Dispatch Center contribution, which we've seen increases due to changing communities and rising operational costs. Board and commissions were less due to contractual services not coming in so high, same as legal services. That was less than what we had budgeted. Fire department expenditures are slightly above what was predicted based on the GEMT, which those expenditures are offset by the revenues we bring in by that ambulance servicing program. Other department expenditures were either lower than budgeted or in line with budgeted amounts. The contributions to the police and fire pension funds are less than what was budgeted. And like I said, those contributions we receive that are actually, those are actual receipts we receive, which is partially 2022's levy and 2023's. The budget you see for 2024 was for the 2023 levy. So we always budget for the following year's levy. So that's why we probably always will have a difference in what we budget and what we actually bring in. The chart on page 3 shows the total revenues and expenditures for the general fund and the impact on fund balance. This is really the the meat of the report, basically, and what this shows. Our fund balance increased by $531,880 for the fiscal year. Our village policy requires that the unassigned fund balance plus the amount restricted for working cash be at least 25% of the subsequent year's expenditures. If you look at that chart, the amount increased to 44.3% from the 38.7% in the prior fiscal year. After there was another prior period adjustment, and I'm going to let Martha explain that one to you because we've had a couple, and it's by no means anything that we're doing. It's all about how accounting for keeps changing with GASB rules. It's basically based on the deposit with Intergovernmental Risk Management, a public entity risk pool, was classified on the governmental fund, was changed again to be an assigned fund balance. It actually was removed last year and put as a deferred inflow or outflow.
Which one?
Inflow. Which to any of you means absolutely nothing. but now we've moved it back into be included in the fund balance, but it's assigned for insurance purposes. The water and sewer. So now we'll move on to the water and sewer fund highlights. Chapter 4 of my memo summarizes water and sewer fund activity. We'll see that the net position did increase by 1.3 million. Water and sewer revenues were slightly above the budget due to billed water consumption and weather conditions. It's all based on what water consumption is. Rates were increased 3.42% on June 1st of 2023, and that was to offset the 5% increase in the cost of water from the city of Chicago. The village did not raise any rates based on our own operating costs. So that's a water fund. I encourage you, Bob's already reading it and he's loving it. I encourage you to read the transmittal letter and the management's discussion and analysis located in the beginning of the report. The annual report includes a great deal of information, and these documents provide a description of the financial statements and summarize and explain the village's financial activities during the fiscal year. This report really, and the results of this report are the result of a well-functioning team that admirably continues to weather fiscal challenges and staffing changes and economic staff's diligence in maintaining the accounting records and careful conscientious attention on all levels of village management and operations staff made this possible. Thanks to Matt Walsh for his leadership, and thank you Kiki Boyer and the finance team for all their hard work. Now I'd like to introduce you to Martha, she from Sickage, and she will really give you some riveting information.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah, the first love it.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you, Rosie. I am Martha Trotter. I am here representing Sickage, the village's independent accounting firm, and I am the lead principal on the village's financial statement audit engagement. Happy to be here tonight to present to you the results of the fiscal year 2024 audit. So as Rosie noted, we have issued the annual comprehensive financial report, which is the thick packet that you have in front of you. In addition to the ACFR, as we call it, we've also issued a number of other documents that have been provided to you for your review. The board communication, the management letter, which is issued in accordance with Illinois compiled statutes, the TIF examination or TIF compliance reporting. IMRF allocation report, which provides information to the allocation of the village's IMRF plan, which is a cost-sharing plan with the library. So a portion is allocated to the village and a portion to the library. And the GATA report, which is an additional report required to comply with Illinois GATA statutes. So as you can see, there's some state statutes requiring additional reporting. To that note, I will add, I want to extend our team's appreciation and gratitude for all of the hard work that goes into preparing for an audit. The amount of information that we need to go through in order to complete testing in accordance with generally accepted auditing standard and additional government auditing standards based on the village's grant activity is a significant amount of information. From year to year, there's new GASB pronouncements that we must look at, and there seems to be more and more information that we need to review. So the village's finance and accounting department is inundated with requests from us. And in addition to their day-to-day operations, they are able to provide us all the information that we needed in order to complete our audit testing procedures. Our audit, bulk of our field work was completed in July and August, and the reports have been issued timely in accordance with the audit schedule, in accordance with state statutes, which require the audit to be issued within 6 months of the village's fiscal year end. So they have all that information that is needed to file with the various state agencies and also to submit the report to the Government Finance Officers Association for the Certificate of Achievement Program. So I do want to just acknowledge all the effort that goes into preparation for an audit and extend our team's appreciation for all the work and effort that goes into this. And also, as you'll see in the reports that I go through, the very minimal adjustments that we had as part of our audit, essentially the information that's been provided to us is very, based on our testing procedures, we have very minimal, if any, corrections from year to year. So we are grateful to work with such a well-prepared team. I'll just highlight a few things since there is such a great deal of information. I'll focus on the annual comprehensive financial report. And as I stated, the village does submit the report to the Government Finance Officers Association Certificate of Achievement Program. Within the introductory section on page Roman numeral 4, you'll find the Certificate of Achievement that was issued for the previous year's ACFR. What this lets you know is that the financial statements issued by the village meet the high standards of the GFOA in excellence in financial reporting. And we are expecting the ACFR that you have in front of you that I'm presenting to you tonight, that will be submitted as well. And we do expect a similar award for the FY24 ACFR to be awarded. And once again, that just commends the effort and amount of reporting that goes into preparing a full annual comprehensive financial report. The independent auditor's report is located on pages 1 through 4 of the annual comprehensive financial report. And that is where you'll find our opinion on the audited financial statements. I am pleased to be able to present a clean, unmodified opinion on the village's financial statements. That is the highest level of assurance that we can provide, and that is based on our testing in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards. We also have an additional reporting requirement based on the level of grant activity of the village. On pages 5 and 6, following the independent auditor's report, you'll find our report on internal control over financial reporting and compliance. And this is related to the, as I stated, the grant activity. So additional testing procedures, additional compliance procedures were completed. And had there been any items that rose to the level of a material weakness or a significant deficiency or any issues of noncompliance, that would be reported in this section of the report. However, if you read through these two pages, you'll see no such items were discovered. So based on our testing, in accordance with general governmental auditing standards, no items of this nature came to our attention. So there's nothing of that nature to disclose here. And as Rosie noted, the two great sections of the financial statements to read through if you read nothing else is the management discussion and analysis, which is on page numbers MD&A 1 through MD&A 17. It's paginated differently from the rest of the report, as well as the transmittal letter, which is in the introductory section and has the Roman numerals. Both of these sections of the report are prepared by the village. They do correspond to the audited balances, but what they do, that they go a little bit above and beyond what's in the financial statements. They provide additional discussion and analysis, comparative information to the previous year's audited financial statements and balances, and provide that discussion and analysis as to what caused the changes and what the variances were from previous year and what led to those changes. So those are great sections to provide a bit of extra context to just the balances themselves and provide somewhat of an executive summary of the different sections of the financial statements to assist in your reading of those. The basic financial statements begin on page 7 and 8 with the statement of net position and page 9 and 10, the statement of activities. Both of those statements are presented on a full accrual basis of accounting. Unlike what you're used to reviewing on a monthly basis, these include the village's long-term assets and liabilities, such as the capital assets net of accumulated depreciation, the IMRF and OPEB, the police and fire, pension liabilities. All of those long-term items are incorporated into these balances, unlike what you typically see from a month-to-month basis. The information is presented for governmental activities in one column, business-type activities, or the water and sewer information in a separate column, and taking you to the total entity-wide gives you a picture of the full village in total. Mm-hmm. The following the statement of activities, you'll begin the governmental fund financial statements, and that starts on page 11 through 12 with the governmental funds balance sheet. This information is presented on a modified accrual basis of accounting, so does not include those long-term assets and liabilities, which I just discussed, more in line with what you're used to seeing on a monthly basis. We'll just add to, Rosie mentioned the restatement related to insurance deposits, so I wanted to give a little bit more context because this might be the most unique item in the report this year. So there have been some restatements to the deposits held with the IRMA insurance pool. Previously, those were reported, these are reported in the governmental, in the general fund financial statements, which report on a modified accrual basis of accounting. So long-term assets and liabilities are not reported here. However, those the IRMA deposits were considered long-term, so the receivable was offset by a deferred inflow. So it was essentially held on the balance sheet to show you the gross deposits held with IRMA, but because they were considered unavailable, they were offset by a liability. So there was no impact in the general fund previously. The restatement is due to a change in IRMA bylaws, which allow the members of IRMA to access those deposits. So they're no longer considered long-term receivables, which is why there was a restatement to reflect those balances in the fund balance. So going forward, the change in the IRMA deposits will actually flow through the general fund income statements as an increase or decrease, depending on what the deposits are, whether the deposits increase or decrease from year to year, and no longer are offset by a deferred inflow because they are now considered accessible based on IRMA's bylaws and guidelines. So that was the cause of the restatement.
Good.
Hopefully that clarifies a little bit.
Were we holding those deposits? Why were we holding those deposits versus them?
Those deposits are paid to IRMA, to the insurance agency hold for insurance purposes to pay out. They can be accessed to, for instance, make payments or apply to your current liabilities from year to year. So they are accessible and can be accessed.
Do you know why IRMA changed their policy?
I can't say for certain. I'm sure they review and see how members utilize and maybe take into consideration member requests. But
if towns were having to put it on as a liability, enough towns maybe said we don't.
Right.
Or they want to use it versus a long-term. Sounds like they used it.
There's components of deposits that are held for long-term purposes, so they might be accessed and kind of revised how different types of deposits are held. There are certain deposits that are still considered long-term by IRMA that are not accessible, so maybe a recategorization. But I, without reading or talking to IRMA's board, I can't say for certain.
Okay, thanks.
The enterprise fund financial statements follow the governmental fund financial statements. And as Rosie noted, the water and sewer fund operating income was $1.4 million for the fiscal year. The net position increased $1.3 million. So the operating income is your operating revenues as compared to operating expenses. The non-operating items, the significant piece that resulted in a slight decrease to the operating income are the interest expense related to debt. And then the pension trust funds information is summarized on pages 21 through 22. This is presented for both the police and firefighter pension funds in total, your fiduciary component unit information. And there was a net increase in the net position of $3.1 million that is held in trust for the benefit of the police and fire pension funds. There's information in the footnote disclosures that detail out how each of the pension funds performed, as well as later in the financial statements, the individual police pension fund information and fire pension fund information is found beyond the footnotes to the financial statements. And the last item I'll highlight, there is a whole section of budget versus actual information where you can find each individual budgeted funds financials as compared to the actual as compared to what was budgeted, as well as the previous fiscal year's audited information for comparison purposes. And the statistical section of the report is the last section that provides a significant amount of historical data for a variety of statistics for key operating items, your fund balances, net positions for the past 10 fiscal years, tax levy information and collections, significant revenues that can all be located and is provided for 10-year historical purposes in the statistical section of the report. Any questions on the annual comprehensive financial report?
I don't think so. It's good. Any comments?
Well, I have a question about, Rosie had mentioned that the a lot of changes to GASB coming up, and I'm wondering how we should be thinking about that. Is that going to be impacting our staff time, your time?
Yeah.
How do we prepare for that?
Great.
Or do we even have to?
That's a great question, and absolutely. Preparation for that is highly advised. So I think Rosie and Kiki could answer this as well, but I believe the past couple of years, there's been some significant GASB pronouncements that have added a great deal of time to the audit, regardless of whether they had impact on the financial statements or not. So this, for the fiscal year ending April 30th, 2024, there was significant GASB 96 that actually did not have any impact on the village's financial statements. So there's no impact on the reporting there, but we still had to analyze all of the IT contracts the village has in place, which are on a subscription type of arrangement, which, as many of you know from even your personal lives, more and more IT contracts are software contracts are subscription based, and you don't own the software, you pay for a subscription. So one of the items that we had to evaluate this year is obtain a listing of all of those contracts that the village has in place from all the different departments and determine if they were long-term in nature. So anything that was that goes beyond 1 year at a time. So no annual renewals, but contracts that span 2, 3, 4 years or more, or have renewal options built into the original contract, and assess those contracts and determine what their impact on the financial statements was. Based on what we reviewed, there was no material impact on the village's financial statements. So those are reported as past adjustments in the board communication, showing what the impact would have been had they been adjusted for. But they were not material to the point where they needed to be reflected in the financial statements. So they did not impact your financial statement reporting. That all the effort to compile those listings and pull those contracts on the village's end, and all of the effort on our end to review and verify those contracts and calculate the potential impact fell under the purview of the audit scope. So even though they didn't impact your financial statement presentation, we still had to add that additional testing procedures. One thing we do with the village's finance and accounting department in our planning phase of the audit is we go through upcoming GASB pronouncements, whether they're upcoming for the next fiscal year, 2, 3 years out, whatever GASB has already issued that we know will be coming down the pipeline, we discuss those and discuss the potential impact they may have so that the team is aware of what types of items we'll be requesting related to those and what sort of preparation, if additional training is necessary. If we can provide any additional training related to those items, we do offer that throughout the year. We have webinars on implementation of GASB pronouncements. There's going to be some significant changes to compensated absences upcoming in the next fiscal year. A few years down the line, there's going to be a whole overhaul of the financial reporting model. So a lot of that does take a lot of extra time and effort and training, and we try to offer that and provide samples and have that discussion as early as possible as soon as we're aware of those items.
Yeah. Why it's important to have a good Rosie. Yeah, thanks. That's a great. And Kiki, too. Kiki. Sorry, Kiki. It's all you guys. Any further questions or comments? So I don't think there's any more. You know, just a couple observations. I actually did read this. And I think it's and there's just a few things. I mean, I think, first of all, it's interesting how our revenue had increased by 5.63%. And most of it came from investment income, which is interesting because, you know, with all the changes in the interest rates. But I also noticed that you have ladders going out, which is very smart. And that's why we pay you the big bucks. But those are really smart instruments that they have. So I appreciate you guys doing that. The only observation I had on the expense side, and I know that, you know, Matt and I have talked about it a little bit. Obviously, you're keeping your expenses down. Thank you very much. Keeping us efficient is in the area of 911. I noticed a little bit of increase in your expense in that area. And I'm going to guess it's going to be more over time. And that's probably something you ought to look at, just as how can we, and I know we are. So, but fund balance being at 44%, it's a nice place to be, but I think we'll also have to look at that over time. So, good stuff. So thank you so much. And I appreciate, all the work that the auditor firm did as well. So with that, I guess we'll take a vote if there's no other further questions or comments. Okay.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Very good. All right. Thanks again, you guys. It's a great job. All right. So we'll move on to we have no further business. So we'll go into executive session. So if I can get a motion to move into executive session.
Okay.
Barely got that out.
Move to enter into executive session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C11 to discuss pending litigation, and the village board will adjourn after executive session and will not return to open session.
Okay.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell? Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
President Meduzzi?
Yes. All righty.